Once the skates come off, it's game on for us. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
On shooting. Whoa, that went off the shoulder of Hudobin and up into the screen. But there's the horn to end the third period and the game. The Leafs end the shutout streak, but they cannot end their losing ways.
Well, Joe Bowen, the final call tonight. The Carolina Hurricanes 4-1 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And a little bit of a 180 here. Of course, a lot of you have been listening to Toronto Raptor basketball. So the good news for Toronto sports fans, the Raptors chalking up a victory. But not the same for the Maple Leafs as we switch gears and head into Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We will open our phone lines not to talk about the Raptors, but to talk about the Leafs. And I do want to hear, from people down at Air Canada Centre just about the ambiance and the crowd. There wasn't a lot to cheer for early on, but in the third period, Dion Phaneuf responding to a challenge from Eric Staal, the goal finally being scored, a little bit of life and energy and work ethic and results and buzzing around the Carolina net. Little late, but at least something we hadn't seen for the first two periods or so went on. So we do welcome those calls at 870-0590, *590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Now, as we got said, Ozzie, counting down the hockey game and the basketball game to end, and you adjusted the TV sets here for the games that are going on and everything, get in the perfect Ozzie environment. You said they had the fight of the dog today.
Yeah, they did. You know, they had a little bit of fight in the dog. Unfortunate part of it is the dog was a chihuahua. You know what I'm saying?
How about a shih tzu? We got a little shih tzu.
Well,
Miley.
You have one of those. How's Miley? Eh? Very, very tender, kind. Occasionally.
She's at least yapping.
She's a yapper.
Yeah.
She's a yapper. Okay, so the Clarkson fight, the Dion Phaneuf fight, I guess there was a bit of fight in the dog as far as that. There was a push back towards the end of the game when the Leafs actually got on the scoreboard after that long, long scoreless drought by forwards. You know, Nazem Kadri scored in the third on the power play. Hudobin makes some good saves near the end, and yet a similar result. You know, this Carolina team, who, by the way, coming into the Air Canada Centre tonight, Gord, was eighth in the Metropolitan Division. That would be 15th overall in the Eastern Conference. And I know they've done well of late, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know what you're saying.
I know a lot of people were looking at, well, you've got one of the bottom feeders. This has to be a win. I suggested earlier that this game is going to be harder than going into Ottawa just because of the way Billy Peters, I think, has his players buying in. It's not pretty. I thought it was a sloppy game tonight. There were times where Carolina did not manage the puck very well, and you saw some of the viz on Billy Peters behind the bench. He was livid. But the Hurricanes get the job done. They certainly, when you get a two-goal lead after one period of play, I would have loved to have been a Carolina Hurricane because it would have been easy to play the rest of the night knowing how this team, the Maple Leafs, are under the gun so much and how fragile they are. It just showed once again that this is a team that is really fighting it, no question about it.
Well, on the flip side, it was a Carolina team that was juxtapositioned with the Maple Leafs, what, 5-6 weeks ago, when the Leafs went in Carolina. And that was their first loss in that great streak of, what, 11 wins in 12 games or, you know, whatever it was, and the game that was expected. And Carolina, that you could have put a knife in the jugular there, to their credit, came and won that game. And unfortunately for the Maple Leafs, that's been kind of the beginning of the end for this funk they find themselves in right now. We'll have Bob McGill joining us top of the hour. We'll hear from Leaf coach Peter Horchuk as well. Squeeze a call or two in before. Steve, of course, a Leaf fan who is in Nashville where the Predators are playing as well as any NHL team. But how did you enjoy tonight's game as a Leaf fan?
You know, the Leafs have made me sick as well, Gord, so we can both relate to that.
Misery loves company, yeah.
I don't know what Brendan Shanahan does now, and I think we can officially say he's on the clock. We know what this group of players can do. And I think in the salary cap NHL, his job is incredibly tough. If we're the number 8 pick in the draft, we're pretty much going to be status quo. The long-term contracts on this team, it's the second highest payroll in the league. It's not like there's a lot of flexibility here. And I think we're clearly getting to a point where the on-ice product, it's pretty much not in dispute, that they're just not good enough. The thing that bothers me as a fan is, like Ozzie was just saying, it's not like this Carolina team is a juggernaut, but at least they seem to put some effort forth. And when the bottom six forwards on this team seem to be the ones putting out the most effort consistently, I mean, Tyler Bozak, whatever happened from the first 20 games to the last 25 games, it's just night and day. Whatever light was on has clearly gone off for him. That's what's frustrating as a fan. Just not this team not being willing to play honest hockey. If they don't cheat, they can't play. They don't know how to play defensively. And this is just a cyclical issue here for this group. And I'm just curious to see what Brendan Shanahan does. And he obviously doesn't like to talk very much, but it would be just nice to hear some kind of clear direction on what happens in the second half.
Steve, always appreciate the call, and hope you get better as well from your what ails you. Maybe a win on Wednesday. We'll do that. Want to chat more about Steve's comments as well, and we do welcome our callers. We'll hang in there. We'll take some more calls later on, but we got to grab our man Chris Johnson right now from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining us on Leafs Nation postgame. And, you know, Chris, one thing Steve said, you know, Brendan Shanahan's decided to be, I would say, almost a little bit smug. Certainly, he steps back. He's not very, not a guy that wants to talk a lot to the media, which can be fine. But, you know, Ken Holland, who he learned under, is very accommodating quite a bit. And I'm curious at some point, if you're the Maple Leaf fans in that, rather than Peter Horachuk always facing the music, do you expect Brendan Shanahan to be a little more front and center?
Well, honestly, I don't know what he can do at this point. I mean, when I watch that game, guys, I honestly think they have to make a trade pronto. I mean, there's such inertia in that group. They just look frozen tonight. I mean, even speaking with the players afterwards, you know, I don't see a lot of solutions here other than some kind of warning shot. And, you know, to me, it's not what Brendan Shanahan says. It's what he does. And I think that was part of, I caught the end of Steve's comments there, the call. But, you know, I really do think something has to happen. And in the past, if they had done that after this kind of performance and what's gone on, I would say that's reactionary. There's no reaction here. This is the same exact thing we've seen for four seasons of Leafs hockey, and they have to stop it. There's just no other way around. Phil Kessel said tonight, I don't even know what to make of it anymore, which wonders to me if he's mentally checked out. And, you know, I think this is a serious loss, not just one in the series of, but the way this team went out and played, the way they allowed Carolina to get to the front of the net so consistently, especially in the first period. And I thought as soon as things went wrong, everyone was looking for someone else to blame or step up, and obviously that didn't happen.
Chris, are you surprised that, you know, this top line has been reunited the last couple of games by Peter Horachuk, hoping to infuse some kind of a pushback or get things going offensively like they were able to do so in the early stages of this season? But the way that these three, even in particular tonight, minus 11 combined, was that Leaf top line of Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, and Kessel. Are you surprised collectively of just the way things have just fallen that far apart, even for the top guys?
Well, I'm not surprised in one sense, because, again, he played them together early in the game. And you know, I don't understand why that's happened. I mean, they proved, if nothing else in previous seasons, the first half of this season, that at 5-on-5, you know, I just don't think you can play those three guys together and expect to hold your own against other teams' top forwards. And you know, for a time under Peter Horachuk, they got away from that. But the last two games on the road, and again early on here tonight, they were back together. And I just, you know, it's not a winning formula. It's not something that's brought them success. And you know, I think that was a misjudgment. And you know, I realize that nothing's kind of working right now. We've seen a lot of different line combinations, but you know, that one to me should be put to rest for good, and try to work it around with the other guys, because you know that line has really not been very good at 5-on-5.
You know, something just to your comments off the top about it's strange, the vanilla reaction, kind of like Jacques Martin when he used to come out in the playoffs and face the media after the Leafs beat the crap out of his Ottawa team each game, and you said, "Hey, show some emotion or something." And tonight, when Dion Phaneuf engaged Eric Staal, I mean, the reaction was almost instantaneous, at least as far as the fans were, to at least see some fight. And really, that's been as problematic as anything, as you say, has been this acceptance or malaise as it's gone through without trying something different.
Yeah, you're right. And but the fight, you know, it comes 6 minutes into the third period when they're down 3-0 and well on their way to the loss. I mean, I guess I'm nitpicking a little bit, but to me, where this game got off the hinges was in the first period. And as soon as Carolina had any success and they scored, you know, at least had a decent start, and then Malone scores that first goal, and it just you see them go to a puddle. And you know, I don't know that it's leadership. I don't know that you can say it's one guy or three guys that wear letters. But there's clearly something flawed at the core of this team. I mean, I don't think anyone would dispute that given the long history we have here and given what they're going through again. Now, it's 3 wins in 16 games. Like, even bad teams don't usually go through that kind of stretch. I mean, maybe the Edmontons and Buffalo have this year, the teams that are at the very bottom of the standings. But, you know, you won't find too many teams that have that level of struggle. And you know, this is from a Leafs team that before that, you know, was well inside the playoffs. And we've just seen that play out so often that I do think that something's got to change. And you know, I don't know what the answer could have been, but, you know, to me, the fight in the third period, yeah, it's something. But in this case, it was clearly too little too late.
Chris, you know what? I think we're all getting to that conclusion that eventually something does need to occur from this core group. You know, some kind of a trade needs to infuse some kind of a change of direction or change of perspective of the way this team plays. But when you look at Brendan Shanahan, I mean, you know, new on the job and the guys that he brought in, I mean, Dubas, Pridham, I mean, even Mark Hunter to that degree. And for all indications, we're assuming that eventually Dave Nonis is going to be out of the picture. So how does this particular management group that functions as a group of five per se, how do they move forward with, in fact, if something is going to be done, it's really going to be a calculated move with a bunch of inexperienced people at the helm?
Well, I mean, the big picture, it's clearly going to take some planning. And, you know, I know that they're going to be down in Arizona later in this week, you know, with all the pro scouts and trying to forecast how they best kind of move forward to March 2nd, the trade deadline, and perhaps even beyond that. But, you know, I think in the meantime, I'm quite serious that they should all be working their Blackberries and their iPhones and their contacts right now, that I really don't think they can sit on this too much longer. You know, this is something is wrong. It just, again, it's not overreacting to one night's loss. If you go in there and it's just a defeated group of guys, and you know, they tried to switch the coach, and you know, look, they've played actually still even in tonight's game a little bit better defensively than what we were used to in the Randy Carlyle era for times, but the scoring has eluded them, which, you know, might be some bad luck, but you know, whatever it is, mentally, they're just falling to pieces. And you know, I almost feel like there has to be some kind of, you know, warning call made after a game like this. And so I don't know who's the one who's making that trade. I suppose they're all kind of in the room. But, you know, I would advocate a move as soon as possible, even if it's relatively minor, just to try to shake things up. Because, you know, I really feel like, again, everyone's frozen. Everyone's looking around for someone else to do it. And no one really has any answers just to how they can, you know, improve moving forward. There's still 35 games to play.
Well, last question. Just, I don't think Peter Horchuk took over thinking he would have a team that only scored 2 goals in 5 games. The first time the Leafs have done that since 1929 to go back that way. And I'm his mindset, I know he's trying to remain positive. I know he knew it wouldn't happen overnight. Where do you think he's sitting as far as his mindset goes, given his efforts and so far lack of success?
He's upset. You know, because he's seen some of the improvements I know that he's calling for. And you know, he was asked tonight, would you consider going to more of an offensive-minded, you know, focus again? And he said, no, absolutely not, because the good teams don't play that way. When you're trying to build and win a championship, you've got to start somewhere to change a culture. And he believes in the way he's teaching the team. And, you know, really, when you look at the games, you know, the shots still aren't getting away from Leafs quite as much. And everyone here thought as soon as they kind of cut down on that problem that their problems would be solved. Well, obviously it hasn't happened in a handful of games here. And I think that's caused a lot of frustration because, you know, even if it's working, even if we'll accept just for argument's sake that the kind of system that Peter Horchuk is employing and has got them to play will be more successful over a long period of time. When you don't see that success as a player, especially I think a fragile offensively minded group like the one the Leafs are, right now as they're composed, there's a concern that they'll never buy into it. I mean, if they don't see the results and they're feeling the frustration and they're seeing all the sweaters come onto the ice again and the boos and all the negativity that swirls around this team based on, you know, its history of losing, you know, I think there's a danger that the teaching you've done and some of the modest improvements you've made will go to waste. And, you know, I'm sure that's what Peter Horchek's feeling. And he said his number one job now, you know, as they move forward and play in Ottawa on Wednesday night prior to the All-Star break, is to not let too much negativity seep into the dressing room. I think it's going to be nearly impossible with what's gone on here the last few weeks. But, you know, that's where his mind's at. He's just trying to keep everyone positive because there's certainly a lot of swirling emotions, I guess, is best to put it, around the team right now.
Chris, thanks as always. We'll catch you again Wednesday.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the blunt comments from Chris Johnston. We'll come back. More Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stelic and Mark Osborne. Brought to you by your local GTA Acura retailers. Visit yours today. It's your postgame workout. You're listening to Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's a 60-minute game, and you can't let one event, whether a bad call, an injury, or a goal, affect you. And right now, you know, we're reading.
Well, a little snippet from Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Peter Horchek. We'll hear more from him a little bit later on. A 4-1 win for the Carolina Hurricanes over the Toronto Maple Leafs as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You know what, Gord, as difficult as things have been for the Maple Leafs, I mean, here's the one observation as you look at this core group and we're all questioning the core group. If this core group was a good core group, this wouldn't be going on like it is now, right? I mean, it is really probably worse than the 18-wheeler last year. Would you agree at the end of the season that now the feeling just in observing the players, getting glimpses of what's, you know, they're displaying emotionally or how they're reacting to situations is probably worse than it's ever been in quite some time.
Well, because last year you said this can't happen again, and you think, okay, they're going to show and prove that the same type of thing, the same type of incredible collapse like happened last year, and the same kind of comments. Well, we played well, we played hard. Well, you've lost 18 in a row. You know, and just that's where we're hearing the same crap again. So I agree with you. And it's earlier this time. And as Chris Johnston said, it just seems beyond them as a group. We're going to get our friend Bob McGill on. We're going to talk about our earlier call from Steve in Nashville. But Dave in Oakville's been hanging in there for a while. We appreciate you doing that, Dave, and welcome you to Leafs Nation postgame.
Thanks very much. How are you doing?
We're good.
Good. I'm really happy to hear that. Listen, I have a few things to say, and I've been on the show before where I've talked about the C word, you know, and you know, you start out by talking about consistency, and that was really important. I think that what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of consistency, only it's the wrong kind of consistency. It's bad hockey. It's consistently letting the fans down. And as you've known from me calling in before, normally I'm much more positive, but I have to say the C word, you know, goes on to extend into what I've heard many times mentioned. You know, we talk about this core group. There is no core group, and that's the big problem. And I think we have to stop talking about a core group, because a core group is there, they're solid, they're working together, but that's not happening here. So there is no core group. And we shouldn't even be referring to them as a core group. You know, tonight was just a terrible example of hockey. I'd rather be watching, you know, a local Oakville AAA hockey team rather than what I saw at the ACC tonight.
Well, your Oakville AA team did beat our North Toronto AA team for the Silver Sticks. So congrats to them on the weekend. So it was good hockey to watch. But you're right. At the ACC, I mean, I think he's probably echoing a lot of the sentiment you said. Got a little nervous about the C word, but it was consistency and then the core group.
And you know what ends up happening, Gord, that even further complicates this whole scenario for the Maple Leafs or where they're at right now going into the All-Star break is You've got a couple of guys that I think I know they've opened up negotiations with, and whether you want Cody Franson back or not. But just think, if this continues on in this trend, like, why do these guys that are UFAs even want to come back here? You know what I'm saying? It's like if you get a taste or a feel, and if there's nothing as far as hope for the future, then are you going to sign here? You know what I'm saying? And I'm saying Santarelli, I'm saying Daniel Winnick, I'm not talking Cody Franson. And then before you know it, you're going even in a more southern trend instead of going in the other direction.
Well, so, and then, I mean, we looked with empathy and sympathy at the Buffalo Sabres' first appearance here this season. Now you say, wow, okay, at least the Sabres are going to probably get a chance at a Connor McDavid or somebody good like that. They've got another first-round pick. They've accumulated draft picks. They'll trade a Chris Stewart and get some pieces back as a hired gun somewhere else. The fans have bought into that whole thing. They're preserving cap room. They sent a junior player back, and he played well for the Canadian team and Sam Reinhardt. And, you know, list goes on and on about those types of things. And now you're talking about, at least if Connor McDavid was a decent possibility or something, the Leafs aren't even close that way, nor should they be.
Not yet.
So, well, okay, there's time.
No, you know what? I mean, we're kind of kidding about that.
Well, it's unfortunate. Because you'd rather they were. If they were going to finish out of the playoffs this year, I agree with fans. If you're going to finish out, I'd always want. But if you're a player playing, you wouldn't want. I'd come last or dead last if you got one or two of those elite guys that are available. Let's get our buddy Bob McGill from Leafs TV. And, you know, Bob, you're a guy that follows the Leafs closely, follows the Marlies closely. Of course, obviously, played in the organization for so many years. And I know you and Ozzy as ex-players, you still wear it on your heart. You know, you can't escape that part. It when things are going well and certain things and certain players and certain games, there's a lot of pride. This one, I mean, try to verbalize this. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Well, I'm trying to be like, you know, like your guy next to you there, Gord, Mr. Captain Positive there, you know.
And, we're in the sea tonight, but, Big Daddy.
You know, even after a night like tonight, it's a little hard to be that way. And, you know, I think the most disheartening thing, and, you know, we talked about it this morning, Gord, when we were doing our TML Talk Game Day Skate Show, and it's just that you want to see some compete factor. And that's something, again, here tonight, is that when you watch the Carolina Hurricanes, the way they competed, you know, all over the ice, and they beat the Leafs to the puck. They beat them, you know, on the forecheck. They beat them in a lot of different areas here tonight. And, again, it's something about, you know, the drive within, and certainly, you know, I guess the accountability of, you know, guys amongst themselves to push each other to make sure that they snap out of this. And it was a tough one to watch. And, you know, the atmosphere certainly at the Air Canada Center tonight, not a great one, as we see, you know, more sweaters being thrown on the ice and whatnot. And it's just, it's tough to watch. And I can't even imagine, you know, as a player, it's even tougher. No doubt about that. So, you know, they've been in a doldrums, certainly as far as the offense is concerned. A couple guys I thought, you know, competed hard tonight. I thought Phil Kessel played hard tonight, and, you know, Kadri certainly had a pretty decent game. And but there was a lot of no-shows and guys that you expect to be front and center when you're trying to snap out of a four-game losing streak. And, you know, I thought a guy like Tyler Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk were pretty non-existent here tonight. And if this team's got to snap out of it, you need your best players to be your best players.
Big Daddy, I know that entering that road trip last week, and Gordon and I were kind of kidding, and I thought it would be good for them to get away from the noise here in Toronto, and Gord's looking at me saying, are you kidding, going on that Western swing, which we know proved to be a real, real tough trip. But are you surprised, like I am, on how quickly, I think, with the coaching change, or how fragile this group appears, or even with all the chatter when these guys were away and you were down in Florida as well, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, making some moves with this core group. Does it appear as though that they're almost resigned to that fact and almost thinking it or feeling it themselves, that they're just now waiting for something to happen?
Well, that's a good question, Mark. But, you know, I mean, if it's one thing to hear it and to talk about it and maybe even to wish upon it, but You know, when you're talking about the core group, you know, you've got your you know, Nazem Kadri obviously is one of those core guys. He's an RFA at the end of the year. But I think the bigger thing is that when you look at the core group that's been here for, you know, 4 or 5 years now, you know, the Dion Phaneufs, the Tyler Bozaks, the, you know, the Loopholes, certainly the Phil Kessels and guys like this. A lot of it is, you know, the contracts that most of these guys have are going to be pretty difficult to get rid of. And I think that's going to be the challenge, you know, for the management group here moving forward, before the trade deadline now and or, you know, in the summertime, which it might take until the summer to make some moves like those, is that trying to get rid of a couple of these contracts for them to make headway. I mean, you've got certainly a guy like Cody Franzen, who's an unrestricted free agent. They don't have the room to sign him right now. Bernier's an RFA, Kadri's an RFA, and if they have the same sort of group coming back, they can't make those moves because they don't have room under the cap. So, you know, yeah, you want to change the core, but it's going to be some certainly wheeling and dealing to be done to try and see if they can get rid of a couple of contracts to make significant changes on the hockey club.
Bob, I want to ask you two questions. So first, a quick one. Was the crowd a little better at the end after the fight and after the goal, at least?
Yeah, they were, but, you know, I guess they came out again when Eric Staal, you know, scored that empty netter. So, but, you know, during the course of the start of the third period when the first sweater came on the ice, and I think there was three in total that ended up on the ice during the course of the third period. So never a great thing. And I think the people, you know, really are like kind of looking around like, really, you're doing that? Like,
okay,
anyway,
but okay, here's my question. Here's my question about the sweater thing. Okay. Okay, I may be the only guy. I don't get the big deal about it, okay? And I think they've made it into a big deal. I think you're an idiot to do it now. I think you are because I see them race. Like, if they could have that kind of energy applied to trying to win a game, you know, that might be good, okay? So instead of the 18,000 fans who saw a crappy game tonight, we talk about three people that threw a sweater, and you get some comments from players about the disrespect, the whatever. It's like, I think these guys that feel they've been challenged or whatever it may be, that guy, like, I heard the TV guy going, hey, it's dangerous to throw it on. Well, if my 89-year-old Aunt Peggy is skating there, yeah, it's dangerous. But I don't know, you in the NHL and Ozzy, like, seriously, yeah. A sweater coming on the ice, you couldn't skate around it or something. I just, like, it seems to be this whole other thing that it's a gauge about how bad things are. I just almost think, okay, catch the guy, fine. Get the sweater, throw it off. What do we need to ask the players about their comments about it?
Yeah.
You know, anyway, that's just my comment about it because it's become this gauge. And I'm more for the other people that didn't throw a sweater and are walking home, TTCing at home or driving home saying that was terrible.
Well, it was. And again, it's just, you know, when you think of, you know, in a month's time, you know, things have really unraveled. 3 wins in the last 16 hockey games for this team. And it all started in Carolina, and it sort of accumulates here tonight with another loss to the Hurricanes. And I think the Carolina Hurricanes have been a thorn in the Maple Leafs' side over the last number of years. Tonight was their 20th victory in the last 28 meetings between these two teams. So it just goes to show you how they just, you know, certain teams have certain teams' numbers. And it wasn't, I guess, the team you wanted to have come in here when you're coming home from a 4-game road trip in which you lost every game and you needed some kind of energy here tonight. And they certainly didn't have it right from the get-go. And I would say tonight that Jonathan Bernier didn't give them the opportunity either to sort of hold them in the game, as he had one goal disallowed and still allowed 13 shots here tonight. So on a night, and I know we spoke of this morning, that, you know, you go back to last year and, you know, Bernier comes in, and I mean, you think of how many nights he was the number one star because they were getting outshot like 45 to 20 or whatever it was, and they'd win the hockey game. Well, he's been just okay this year. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can get a goaltending performance. And, you know, James Reimer here tonight, you know, stopped what, all 18 shots that he faced. And going into Ottawa, I don't think there's any doubt about who's going to be starting in goal. He's absolutely owned the Senators, so hopefully he can backstop them to a victory come Wednesday night and get them sort of feeling at least a little bit better about themselves heading into the All-Star break.
Big Daddy, I know that you mentioned, you know, there were some guys that at least had a bit of effort in them. You know, Kessel one, Nazem Kadri another. And I'd even go back on this road trip and thought that, you know, Naz had did his best, I think, to create some things offensively. I mean, it wasn't as though, you know, he wasn't visible. But, you know, one guy that I really got to ask you about is, you know, the guy who centers JVR and Phil Kessel. And I know that he lost his, you know, grandmother a number of weeks ago, and I'm sure for any player, we've been through that. That does affect you. But I'm just kind of curious as to, is there anything else you can glean out of, you know, a player in Tyler Bozak that's been, you know, very good on faceoffs? I mean, he's been had great chemistry with those other two line mates, but man, he's now gone 9 out of 10 games with bagels across the board,
yeah.
And most nights not very visible at all, and it's very puzzling, at least for me.
Well, it is, and you know, it's something where, you know, nobody likes to see you know, a grandparent you know, end up, you know, passing away, but you know, you do have to remember that this is your job here, and you can't let that affect you. I guess, you know, I always talked with different players that I coached. If something happened, you know, in their life, whether there was a death or, you know, somebody was hurt or whatever, the one thing that you could do is the few hours that you could sort of put it on the back burner and not worry about it was when you got to the rink. You know, you'd spend an hour on the ice in practice or 3 hours to, you know, be focused in on a hockey game. And that's the time that you could kind of put it to the side a little bit and sort of have your sanctuary in your work. And I don't know if Tyler Bozak has to do that, but he certainly, I agree with you, Mark, is the fact that, you know, now what, he's got one goal and one assist in the last 10 hockey games. And, you know, if you look at the minuses that have piled up against that line too, where they've been, you know, I think he was -3 here again tonight. So it's difficult when things aren't going well, but you got to find your way out of it. And boy, you know, when you've got a whole line that's, you know, had a difficult time getting on track offensively, and then you throw into the fact that it seems like they're on the ice a lot when the puck ends up in the back of their own net. But, you know, as I said before, you know, come Wednesday night, your top line better be front and center if you want to snap out of this, because, you know, until you get guys like Hall and Lupo back in the fold, which they should be back after the All-Star break, you know, you need other guys, and you know, different players have the opportunity to try and step up. But you know, ultimately, your top players, when they're in the lineup, they got to perform and help your team when you're in difficult times, as they are right now.
Well, Robert, always appreciate you joining us. Great seeing you back at the rink. I know we want to get back to the good old times, the heady times, like 2 weeks before Christmas. So we'll see what Wednesday brings. Thanks for joining us, pal.
You bet, any time, and stay warm.
We will do that. Bob McGill from Leafs TV joining us. Okay, Daryl's been hanging in there this long. Do you want to chat what Bobby has to say? You want to get to another
call? Happy to move on, Daryl. I know that we didn't have an opportunity to respond to the comments of Steve from Nashville when he was talking about, you know, trades or
well, let's get Daryl on first. Yeah. He's been hanging on forever. Daryl, thanks for hanging in there. Welcome to Leafs Nation postgame.
Good evening, guys. I'm really curious what you think of this observation, but it's something I've been thinking about, and you have to hear me out on this, taking it back to the Wilson year and then the 3 years since. It's the small sample size of each season that has devastated and blown the year up for the team, not the large sample size. Like, if you remember, with Wilson, they were playing quite well, a playoff team. The 18-wheeler went off, small sample size, the year was done. The year after, the small sample size was literally 4 minutes in the game 7 of the first round of the playoffs. They made the playoffs. They were on their way to the second round. It blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, out of L.A., if I'm not mistaken, 12 games to go, 13 games to go, they were third in the conference. It goes off. The small sample size blows the year. This year, top scoring team in the NHL for virtually all season, 10 or 11 games over 500. And now it's the small sample size of the season, it's blown the year up. it's an odd thing that the small sample size has ruined the year. Your perception might be that watching this team all that time, the large sample size, they've been bad. The small sample size, they've been good. It's just the opposite.
Well, and that's why I think it always catches you by surprise, because it's everything seems to be going great, and then it comes from nowhere. So it may be a small sample size, Ozzie, but there's always, as Darryl does, the big ramifications. The end result is it's a disappointing finish, a catastrophic finish, a negative finish. Small sample size or not, it's happened four times, as he articulated.
Well, and our only conclusion to that matter, if you do look back, and he brought up the Ron Wilson years, right? Because that's when it kind of started. You know, things were going along pretty well, and then all of a sudden fell off the rails. Fell off the rails in Boston, fell off the rails last year, and now fell off the rails this year. So what's our conclusion with this now four significant times? It comes down to leadership, the core, resolve, pride, passion. Like, if I was to ask you, and it would, you would get just, because you're going to have those moments of a season where you're going to go on a little bit of a losing streak. But who in this team right now would put an end to it? You know what I'm saying? Who's going to, like, step up at practice, in front of the media, inside that dressing room, and just say, it's not going to happen? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I played with players, and I can tell you that wasn't going to happen, because they just had jam. They had leadership. They had pride. They had the kahunas. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Okay, so you know what I'm saying, and you know the players that we're talking about that, you know, were, whether it was with the Maple Leafs, and it was Dougie, or it was Wendell, or Dave Vanderchuk. You know, like, we're talking about winners, you know, when it comes down to, you know, what they've been able to do in their career. Now, they may not have won, you know, like, we did not win. Wendell never won, but yet there are so many others that have not won, and yet we're talking about pride and passion and all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, it's Matt Sundin and having a meeting in Vancouver when the team was on a losing slide, and they turned things around. It's the book, 67. The team lost 10 games that year.
Well, look at Darcy Tucker. Look at Gary Roberts.
Darryl Sittler.
You know, Matt's. I mean, it goes on and on. And we're talking about, you know, almost 50 years of stuff. And yet, hey, we there's nothing we can do about that. We can't do anything about the last many, many years. So we can do what's going on now. And again, address this particular group and say, we've got to do something to change things here. So.
Well, and just to go over, and I don't, when I bring up the last Stanley Cup, it's not that to lord that over this team, what have you. It's just in doing the research for the book, that also coincidentally is the Leafs' longest losing streak that year, 66-67 season. They lost 10 consecutive games. They also won the Stanley Cup. And George Armstrong had a players-only meeting, and he set it up with a couple of guys like Johnny Bower, some of the veterans, that he just said he'd go around the room just about what you could do. And then when they started jumping on Punch Imlach, he'd say, never mind Punch, what can you do? And a couple of guys spoke up early about what they could do as far as their defensive play, whatever it may be. And that was one thing, and helped get the guys back on track. But, I mean, that kind of thing.
No, I know. And even if we go all the way back to when you and I were younger and watching the Leafs growing up in the 70s, for instance, like, the Leafs were on the right track with Lanny and Darryl and that core group of guys that took the Islanders and beat them that year. And then all of a sudden things started to change, because you would probably know better as to why they did change. Then you go to the early 90s of, you know, Dougie and Wendell and the group of characters that were assembled there. You had pride. You had passion. You believed in that particular group. And then even in the Pat Quinn years, the same thing. You had legitimate teams that were knocking on the door in the top third of the National Hockey League that you could lay and put a lot of, you know, credence in, from Curtis Joseph to Matt Sundin to Tucker to Roberts to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So yeah, no, absolutely.
It's a function of that. They never did win. They never won. And yet they were certainly a very good team and a competitive team.
In the 70s was blown up because of ownership. Harold Ballard was talked into that it was turning into a country club, and Punch Imlach came and got rid of those guys, and they were core leaders. And those guys wore the Leaf with a lot of pride. Mm-hmm. The group in the 90s, Steve Stavro had the cash shorts because he had to come up with $23 million to satisfy the charities and whatever, so couldn't afford to keep guys. And Dougie and all those, they knew that. They knew that when Dave Vanderchuk went for nothing and guys like that went, that it was a sell-off.
And
that
Wayne was team. And Wayne was coming, but that got nixed.
Exactly. I mean, those types of things. So it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's what's disappointing about, and even when I said I'm throwing the Dion Phaneuf that he finally stood up to something, and yeah, you know, good he did it, but too little too late that anybody's been doing that kind of stuff. And you mentioned to give David Clarkson, who's having really a miserable time right now, a little bit of credit for trying to make something happen as well. Just trying to get something going.
Trying to get something going. And yeah, so we've been waiting for this for quite some time. And so it did happen tonight, but one fight. And then what about the other pushback, like jamming into the corners, going to the front of the net, pushing back? And I don't think you're going to get penalties for doing that, but exerting yourself on a consistent basis is what's needed. Roman Polak does it, right? But does anyone else follow Roman Polak's lead, at least in the defensive zone? And the answer is, I haven't seen it. So,
well, it's, you know what? Let's hear a little bit from Peter Horchuk. We'll hear from the Toronto Maple Leaf coach. We'll take a break after that and then talk some more. And, of course, take a look at the out-of-town scores. But here he is, Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Peter Horchuk. Got to be getting a little frustrating after the 4-1 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes.
Peter, go back to work tomorrow. Guys look within each other and try to move from there. Is there anything you can take from this that is going to get this thing better in the immediate future?
Well, you know, we've been trying and we're going to continue to try, that's for sure. We're going to go back to work and we're going to discuss the situation, but you can't continue to spot 2 goals in the first period. We started cheating again on the backside of people. We stopped giving up our F3, and they started getting some shots from it. The chances by our marks were 8-8, but, you know, you have all the good intentions, and I think the guys wanted to, you know, there was a lot of talk about not scoring, so I think that's got under their head, and I told them between periods, you can't cheat to get back into it. You got to stay on course with getting your opportunities. At the end of the day, they're up by 2, and maybe that's the reason why, you know, teams are sitting on their leads a little bit, but why we ended up with more chances, because I think we had 29-19 or 29-18, 28-18, something around there. But when teams are up, it's natural sometimes that, you know, the other team gets more. But we can't spot that. We got to stay on course. We got to play hard. And we cheated in a couple areas and gave them some momentum in that situation. We didn't contain some of their forwards down low, and I thought they had some offensive zone time, but, you know, there was, the intentions were there.
Peter, it almost looks like when you fall behind that the players are all looking around the ice for somebody to come along and save the day. Are you getting that same sense?
Well, I get the sense like there, you know, there's a big letdown, and, you know, there's a, you know, right away I'm talking on the bench and telling them to just go right back to work and go right back at them. Don't let this get in, bother you. Don't let it go. And any negativity out there, you have to, it's a 60-minute game, and you can't let one event, whether a bad call, an injury, a goal, affect you. And it, right now, you know, we're reading, you know, we know that we haven't scored a lot in the last 4 games, 1 goal. We know that we haven't won, so I think the guys' intentions are there, but there's a certain way to play, and, you know, we have to stick to that, and we're going to find ways to get some goals. We had some great chances again. Chances are only a stat. You know, the only thing that really matters at the end of the day are wins and losses.
Peter, I know it's your first year here, but all 3 players we spoke with said it feels like the past where they've had these long losing runs. I mean, is there anything you can do, you think, to break that mentality? Or is that so ingrained now?
Well, I'm not going to let negativity step into that room. I'm going to make them stand up, and I'm going to make them go stand up and go harder. And I'm going to make them, nobody's heads are going to be down, and nobody's, you know, lips are going to be dragging on the ground. There's no way that's going to happen. There's no way to move forward with any kind of negativity inside that room. They're going to have to stand up, face the music, and go that much harder and work their way out of it. There's no easy way out of times like this. And they're going to have some conviction and some resolve. And it's going to be hard. I think we should embrace that challenge to say, we have to get it done.
Do you ever consider turning them loose again?
Wait, Shinny?
What's that?
What do you mean turning them loose?
Well, in terms of, you know, playing a more wide open style, because obviously playing one side of the puck this last little while hasn't worked for them either, and, you know, maybe it's better to be bad and exciting than
bad and not exciting? I don't know. I mean, do you ever think of turning them loose?
No. No, I don't think any of the top teams, any of the good teams in the league play that way. And if you want to start something, if you want to get a mindset, if you want to start playing a certain way, you have to play hard defense and attack the net in the other end. When you play defense, it doesn't mean you don't play offense. Offense is right there. Nothing changes with the offense. It's just that you're competing harder in other areas and you're playing a certain way. Teams that score a lot of goals, Chicago has one of the lowest goals against in the league. All those teams in the West that are the big physical teams that play well and score a lot of goals, they're all also the best defensive teams. There's a certain way to play in the playoffs and to win championships, and if you're going to start a culture of winning, you have to play hard and solid D. Doesn't mean you stop scoring goals.
Well, that song, Turn Me Loose.
Lover Boy.
Yeah, is what? Not going to be. Well, he's not the Lover Boy right now, Peter Horchuk, the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You were thinking too, you know, same minds think alike.
Great minds think alike. That's it.
Same
you
minds.
And I. Okay,
not
same
great
minds.
Minds.
Okay, well, great mind. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that, you know, he's got to maintain that resolve, embrace the challenge. He's saying all the right things. Unfortunately, what we're hearing from the players is not what Peter's all excited about. Like, he's the excited one. He's trying to keep perspective, get them to buy in, be energized, stick together. We're going to stick together, right? It's almost like the Ted Nolan mentality, and that's what Ted happens to do very well, you know, through his NHL coaching career. He's got this ability to galvanize the team and motivate them. I've yet to see that happen in the short period of time with Peter, right?
And well, it's like a parent organizing a birthday party for their 10-year-old and the parent being the only one really enjoying the party, right? The 10-year-old kids don't like it, are there.
Because you actually made them play outside.
Yeah, whatever it may be, whatever may be, that kind of thing. I will come back. We'll go over all the goals, what went on tonight. Take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard as well. The one here in Toronto, not a good one, 4-1. The Carolina Hurricanes defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The game may end, but the analysis never will. Now, Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stelick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Near side for Kadri. Kadri looks with a shot, scores! Holy Mackinac!
Joe Bowen hadn't used that line for quite some time. Nazem Kadri, the only goal tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs, a 4-1 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. Welcoming you back to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
What line are you talking about that he hasn't used that line for quite some time? Do you mean actually describing a goal, or that a forward scored a goal, or
well,
Holy Mackinac?
Holy Mackinac. Holy Mackinac.
He never did that on the Pollock goal in...
Oh, maybe he did. I don't know.
San Jose?
Well, for a forward. How about that? For a forward scoring a goal.
Okay.
And there we go.
Wow.
There we go.
Wow, you're really reaching now.
Well, have you seen what the Leafs have been doing of late as far as trying to chat about
it? Yeah, what do you want
angles,
me to, what do you want me to, you know, being outscored 16-2 in the last five losses? Is that what you need me to throw at you?
Well, these types.
Do you want me to throw at you the top line tonight? Minus 11? So, Phil, because he was on the bench for the first goal, otherwise they would all have been minus that top line
so
on the night on all four goals. What about add insult to injury on the Eric Staal empty net goal? He took a slap shot and Dion was standing in front of the net. Do you think he tried to hit him? Do you think he cared if it went in? I don't think he did care, but he got the goal. So, anyways, little things in the game, right?
Well, let's talk about more little things. Let's talk about the goals in the game. Let's talk about, as we chatted with Bob McGill, about some positives at the end. I guess when the empty net goal went in to make it 4-1, some of the negatives came back. There was a little bit of energy at the end, but it is too little too late. I mean, let's we're talking like it's a house league and cheering our kids on or something like that. The first period, it got away from the team, and Carolina took charge, and they certainly knew that they could smell blood from a team that Chris Johnson articulated, wow, for Chris Johnson to do a kind of a 180 about this team, about just no reaction.
I guess we kind of
know
he's kind of listening to us for a change.
I think otherwise, well, unfortunately, the circumstances change too. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to listen to him for quite a lot of stuff. No, just kidding. Anyways, you were mentioning, let's go through some of the goals or all of the goals. Malone ends up getting the Hurricanes on the score sheet, 7:06 into the first period. By the way, Jake Gardiner just got out of the penalty box. But the thing I wanted to make mention here, you know, Gord, is the way that Tyler Bolzac misread the play through the neutral zone, and he got flat-footed, and the Hurricanes broke down on an odd man rush. And, you know, all that Patrick Dwyer did was shoot for a rebound, and there was a gaping cage with Malone jumping on the rebound, his third of the season. And, by the way, Jay McClement got an assist on that goal as well. So right near the end of that power play, or just as it expired, the fourth line for the Hurricanes gets them on the scoreboard.
Okay.
Great. So that's 1-0.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about?
Go on.
Do you want to read some of the goals? Do you need to look at this sheet here and know that Lindholm just about 39 seconds later, after the faceoffs in the Carolina zone, the Leafs win the draw. JVR is a left-hand shot on the right side. You know, tries to take a shot towards the net. Sekera, the Carolina defender, blocks the shot, and where does it go? Right between the two Leaf defenders, Riley and Pollock, and there goes Lindholm on a breakaway, and he makes no mistake going through the five hole. So a fortuitous bounce, a bad break for the Maple Leafs, and now they're down 2-0 after two periods of play. But how about the first shift of the second period? Now, that top line has already been on for two goals against, and they start the second period.
And a bit of a power play.
Were they on the power play to start?
Was there 16 seconds left or something like that?
I think you might have been right.
Anyway, so just few seconds left on the power play.
Okay, Tolusti comes out of the box, and there goes the top line of Stahl, and Tolusti. They're on the ice. They, you know, I thought the Leaf defenders did okay enough, and Cody Franson defending, but Phil Kessel was the first guy back. And what's the job of the winger when you're the first guy back? You stay there helping your defense. You're in defensive position, and Phil just decided to wander after that, and who was left all alone by himself was Eric Stahl. And Eric Stahl scores his 14th of the season. And by the way, in that first period, Stahl hit the post, and there was a disallowed goal by Jordan Stahl. So now it's 3-0, and Bernier is pulled. And then we head in after two periods of play. It's 3-0 for Carolina. Finally, Nazem Kadri gets the Leafs on the board on the power play with 5 minutes and 11 seconds. A great shot by Nazem Kadri, and I think that was a little bit of relief, and there was some pushback for the Maple Leafs, so let's give them some credit in that third period. 16 shots to 11 for the Maple Leafs, infused a bit of life in them. Hudobin, the Carolina goaltender, you would agree, made some good saves in that.
Absolutely did. And it's funny because Cam Ward's been a Leaf killer historically, so even a break getting the backup goaltender for the Maple Leafs tonight. 4-1 Carolina over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Oz, let's take a quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard, and I'll start with the big one because you've been talking. I'll talk about the New York Islanders. Wow, that's where the Toronto Maple Leaf fans hoped and wished this team would be. Islanders 7-4 winners over the Philadelphia Flyers tonight. Michael Grabner, his fourth of the year. Nikolai Kuhlman scored twice. He's got 11 now. Josh Bailey, his eighth of the year. John Tavares, goal number 21. Nick Leddy, goal number 7. And Anders Lee, one of our favorites, goal number 13 for Philadelphia. Mark Streit, his 7th. Michael Delzotto, his 3rd. Claude Giroux, his 15th. And Chris Vandeveld, his 5th. 7-4 final for the New York Islanders.
I'm going to interject a little bit on that. Anders Lee, University of Notre Dame grad, 6th round in 2009. He had 9 goals in 22 games last year, okay?
Oh, I know.
22 goals in 54 games in Bridgeport last year. And now he just gets his 13th goal of the season.
A 6th-round pick to go with the many first-round picks that are now blossoming on the New York Islanders.
A little research I did for you, Gord, to now make you a little bit more knowledgeable of Anders Lee.
Knowledge bears the noblest. The tree of knowledge bears the noblest fruit.
Anyways, the Vancouver Canucks do the Leafs a favor, winning 2-1 in Florida. Radim Verbata, his 18th, opened the scoring in the first period. Bo Horvat, his third, made it 2-0 after one period. And then Brandon Peary breaks the Ryan Miller shutout with just 2 minutes and 32 seconds left in the game. Vancouver goes into Tampa Bay tomorrow night, and from all indication and what I've read, Ryan Miller will play in back-to-back games before the All-Star break.
Well, he's been in certainly All-Star form of late. Ryan Miller has in Vancouver. Meanwhile, everybody seems in All-Star form with the St. Louis Blues team that we saw this past weekend, and they beat the Colorado Avalanche 3-1. Former Leaf Carl Gunnarsson gets his second of the year. Jaden Schwartz is 16th. TJ Oshie is 13th. Matt Duchene is 13th, gets the lone Colorado goal.
I think that was a little bit laughable of whatever rumors were being spread about TJ Oshie up for trade in St. Louis. Like, really?
I know.
That's wishful thinking. Anyways, on to Minnesota, where the Blue Jackets defeat the Wild 3-1. The Blue Jackets opened the scoring. Brandon Dubinsky, his third. And then on the power play, Zach Parise, his 17th, made it 1-1. And then the last two goals of the game in the third period, the game winner, James Wisniewski, his fifth on the power play, Scotty Hartnell, his 10th, and Devin Dubnyk in his, I believe it's his debut in Minnesota. Correct me if I'm wrong, but anyways, he suffers the loss.
I think it's his second game because he...
Not the answer, though.
He got a shutout in his debut. He also got an assist.
He also got an assist.
Yeah. Well, I want to let you know. Okay.
Couple of other games underway thus far, almost halfway through the second period in Los Angeles. The Flames and LA Kings are scoreless. And then it's 2-2 in San Jose, 10 minutes left in the second period. Scores for San Jose, Pavelski is 23rd and Matt Nieto his 4th. Jordan Tutu is 4th and Steve Bernier his 6th have replied for New Jersey.
So that's it for the out-of-town scoreboard. Like we said, a couple of games going on in progress. The Toronto Maple Leaf game tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll come back. We'll talk. We'll sort of set up the next game against the Ottawa Senators. Again, in reviewing and chatting with Bob McGill, chatting with Chris Johnston, had some pretty opinionated, engaged callers as well. We got to the airwaves a little bit later because the Raptor game, and the good news there was the Raptors won, so we couldn't get on the airwaves till they finished their game. But like I said, Chris particularly I found interesting, because he's a great reader of the pulse there. And as he says, unlike what you talked about, the leaders you've played with or guys in dressing rooms, that you get a sense there's a presence, there's a calm, there's at least a lack of acceptance. And in this case, you got to think, sure, it doesn't sit well with the guys, but appearances for another year in a row seem otherwise. Mm-hmm. Not doesn't sit well, but it's beyond them.
Yeah, you know what, and that's the puzzling part of this is, what are we, 7 games into Peter Horacek? 1-6 are the Maple Leafs, and you would have expected, certainly obviously a more positive result with the coaching change. And I'm reading so much on Twitter now about, making Randy Carlyle look like a genius, that he was able to squeeze so much out of this group. He's kind of obviously sitting in the wind and not wishing any ill will upon his former team, but yet is looking pretty good thus far. And again, this state of affairs, I think just emotionally and internally, is what they've not been able to absorb as a group due to that lack of what I believe is strong leadership in that room.
Well, and Chris even offered the opinion he felt they need to do something over the next 48 hours, even if it is a minor trade, which is saying a lot for Chris. I don't know if we can expect that to happen before the game against the Ottawa Senators or not, but certainly it is the time for a lot of people for some kind of action. I think, and as you say, we'll come back, we'll talk about the guys in the dressing room as well. That have you been on teams, Ozzy, where guys are waiting for something to happen?
That's a great question. I can't remember that. I think people were believing that at one point, and then, of course, it happened. But I never experienced what these guys are feeling right now in my entire career.
Well, it's an unusual one. It's an unfortunate one, and it's reality right now. We deal with it here on Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Sports Delec, Mark Osborne, back with more on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And, you know, as we've talked a lot about the game tonight, the ups and downs, the ebbs, the flows, the predicament the Toronto Maple Leafs find themselves in. And as we look ahead, next game Wednesday, of course, all the action right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan against the Ottawa Senators. Is there silver lining in the cloud? What we saw in the third period, Dion Phaneuf engaging Eric Staal or responding to the challenge and finally not having bagels and having a little bit of a concerted effort, the fans being in a bit kind of a positive mood at the end of the game. Does that lift a lot of things off the Maple Leafs' backs as far as pressures go heading into Wednesday?
Is that what it's come to? Those are the things that we're reaching for to find a little bit of encouragement, as you mentioned, heading into the game against the Ottawa Senators. I guess if I have to look at some form of positive, I would say, yes, I agree with you. Would Dion have engaged with Eric Staal? This was Eric Staal that fought Dion Phaneuf or challenged Dion Phaneuf after the hit on Jordan Staal. So I would say at least it appeared that they gave themselves a little bit of spark in that third period. That Kadri goal obviously was something that got the ball rolling. They had a number of numerous good scoring chances towards the end of the game. And so, yeah, there's something they have to glean on in order to keep themselves focused in some kind of a positive thing. David Clarkson fought earlier in the game. So if there are some things, I guess, to give yourself a little bit of momentum. And don't forget, I think you can encourage yourself that the Sens are on the road in New York against the Rangers on Tuesday night. So they'll be going up against a team that is not going to be rested. So how about that? Isn't that a great optimism from me as far as the game goes?
A little bit. You know, you look at all those types of things that should work in the Leafs' way. So keep in mind, what were they, 14-0-0 at the start of the season when they got the first goal of the game? So you saw a trend that ended rather abruptly in December and really is a non-factor anymore. But, you know, it's funny, Glenn Healy said it on Saturday, talked about the positives, but also said we're getting to the point that we're giving out 20 participation medals where really you still need points in the NHL standings. But some of those things we did look at, let's face it, it's easy to say you're supposed to beat Carolina. You're back at home. You should get back on track. You're in a funk. It's hard. Things aren't going well. When it was 2-0 after the first period and it was pretty boring in that building, it could have been a real, real ugly end as far as the fans go, and deservedly so. That, you know, so, I mean, the one upside is they won't get booed off the ice with the goal, the effort. You know, empty net goal comes back, but they tried. They threw it on there. They got a nice ovation after the Kadri goal. So that worst-case scenario, getting booed out of town, at least didn't happen.
Well, there were still a couple of jerseys thrown on the ice. So, you know, the disadvantage for us is that we're in studio watching the game and doing the game. We don't have the luxury of actually getting the exact feel. You know, we talked about this building being quiet. I don't think we ever heard as quiet a building during the first ever head coached game by Peter Horchuk against the Capitals. That was eerie. I think tonight was obviously a little bit better, but yet again, falling and losing to the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, for a lot of people still doesn't sit well. And we could, you know, do our best, I think, to, you know, glean some form of positives out of the game. At least there was a couple of fights that did occur, and it showed us at least that there is some fight left in this dog, even though your top guys, again, aren't getting it done for the Maple Leafs.
You know, I mean, we've talked about the many parallels, and we had Wendell Clark on last week, and I was talking about coming dead last in 1985. It's the only time the Maple Leafs have come dead last, modern-day era, meaning you get the first overall pick, and the next year, Wendell Clark, when you would have been an opposing player, but getting 33 goals. But also the biggest thing was getting about 20 fights, taking on a number of the heavyweights for a team that wasn't so tough, and how that resonated with the fans. And even tonight, just seeing Dion Phaneuf not choosing not to engage Alexander Ovechkin like he did last week, but just the way the crowd got going. Because you know what? It shows some fight. At least it absolutely shows some fight from a team that really wasn't showing much.
Well, you know what? One thing I will say is that when you are fighting the confidence factor, when you know that you're going back into a so-called hornet's nest back here at home, I mean, all of those factors that you're mentioning, Gord, you know, are things that are certainly going to work against, you know, this particular group, you know, the team, their self-image, their confidence factor, and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure they're feeling the heat tremendously. But you know how you solve all of that? By just putting your nose down to the grindstone and somehow showing effort each and every shift. It doesn't have to be pretty. And again, you know, I look at the way that Carolina was able to start this game, and they've been almost carried by their fourth line the last number of games. I mean, Billy Peters has mentioned how the Jay McClement line has been probably their best line, and they get on the board with the first goal of the game. Granted, Jay Gardner just did get out of the penalty box, but I certainly didn't like the way that Tyler Bozak play through the neutral zone that just sprung the Carolina Hurricanes on the odd man rush. Nice juicy rebound there by Jonathan Bernier right onto the stick of Malone, and that put the Leafs behind the eight ball. And then again, an unfortunate bounce or whatever it is, what you want to call it, that led to the second goal, a breakaway where the Leafs win the draw. Sakira, the Carolina defender, just simply comes into the shooting lane and blocks the JVR shot. And lo and behold, it goes right in between the two Maple Leaf defenders, Polak and Morgan Riley, and Lindholm goes all the way down on a breakaway. And it's like, just, they're not getting lucky bounces their way. And when things are really bad, they go from bad to worse. And that was the case, certainly, that made it 2-0 for Carolina. And that's what they were down 2-0 after one period of play.
Well, end up being a 4-1 win, of course, tonight, the Carolina Hurricanes over the Toronto Maple Leafs at Air Canada Center. And as we look ahead to the game against the Ottawa Senators, or look ahead just in general, you have the All-Star break coming up. Of course, trade talk, many other things. I would think the one thing the finish tonight also helped you with, not that you should make any move based on one game, but desperate measures often come after a bad game like that, something at home. And I think nowadays with salary cap and things like that, it's hard to do, and guys will be patient. And certainly Brendan Shanahan and Dave Nonis, they have a lot of security in their own particular situation. So to me, I wouldn't think anything happening in the next 48 hours. I don't know if you think there's a chance or not.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen or when a deal does, in fact, occur. I think eventually a deal will occur. And again, the game that you do play during the season when you got guys that have term, right, and a good sufficient amount of money is – the teams right now know that you're at a disadvantage, right? And they're just going to obviously, you know, wait. And I think the key for the Maple Leaf management team is to make sure that you don't undervalue your player just for the sake of making a deal. You know, like, it has to be the right deal. And oftentimes you need two dance partners. So whatever the deal, you know, may be that might be creative, and again, taking a player on that has a similar amount of face value when it comes to the cap number, I think the one thing that's going to occur for the Maple Leafs, Gord, is that they're right up against the cap. And if they, for the future, want to unload one of their guys that has term, long term, it might happen in the next little while. But if it doesn't, there's a chance that it won't happen until the summer. And those are the kind of deals I think we've seen in the past that have occurred in the summer, that, you know, cooler heads may prevail. You have a little bit of an opportunity to pull back, you know, both organizations, whoever it is that may make the deal. And then you consummate it, right? It involving how many times do we see that entering into the draft or right before the July free agency period occurs. So, you know, it's basically, sit back, buckle your seatbelt, but I would be shocked, based on now a 500 hockey club, that something significant doesn't occur, whether it's in the next 48 hours or in the near distant future.
Yeah, I'm just thinking with the All-Star break coming up, that's kind of a weekend when people are together and you can breathe a little bit.
Good point by you.
Yeah, no, I was due for a good point. I know I've been kind of struggling to segment. Our guy Steve Fellum, with all these stats he keeps throwing at us, I mean, it's staggering that you were on one of the more exciting teams in 89-90.
Which one? I was on a few.
You're on a few.
Yeah.
But 89-90 was a team that scored a ton of goals, got the first round in the playoffs, and unfortunately next year fell to earth, and then further fell to earth when you were traded to Winnipeg. But that was exciting. Red Kelly had an exciting phase in the mid-1970s, and this is the team that's been exciting about scoring goals. this year anyway, and certainly during the lockout shortened season. But the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs have scored only two goals in a five-game span like they have right now, January 10th to the 22nd, 1929. It was like, what, the Great Depression or something? I don't know. They probably lost their money in the stock market or something like that. But, I mean, you're going back all those years in an era where not as many goals were scored, I don't think. But that's the part that really has been baffling.
Now, you're talking about, the goalless drought or whatever it is that you want to describe it, or the ineptness of them scoring goals going back to January 1929, right? When they only scored two goals in a five-game span.
Yeah, anyway, the thing is, and it's not so much as the two goals in five games, it's just this disappearing. Mm-hmm. This disappearing. It's one thing if they can't get the other part of the game right and that, but they do seem to be making some headway. But it's not even...
Well, let me ask
it seems
you,
like they've been getting chances
but
as much.
You know what? They have gotten some chances, but you see that the pressure is not sustained, right? And the only times, and there were glimpses tonight, you know, what line was it that was getting you some chances? Was it Winnick, Santarelli, and Kadri that were thrust together that had some good zone time? Clarkson was up on that line occasionally as well. But what about the top dogs? You know, the top dogs. You know, they're combined plus minus again tonight. There was a couple of shots, but for a top line that has been used over these last number of years to having such proficiency in scoring goals and being exciting to watch, you know, their approach, it appears as though they're like wounded puppies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're either feeling sorry for themselves or they just are in such a funk that maybe they're not even letting us or being led to believe that they actually do take these things personally, and they've lost so much confidence, and that's the part of a team. And I described this to you before, you know, that this team appears to be such a fragile group, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, no, it's
I don't think there's any other way to describe it.
Well, and anyway, we keep going round and round and round about being fragile, getting out of it. I'd like to think, you know, the way it ended today, a bit, or tonight, a little bit more of a positive heading into Wednesday. Fragile groups, again, does it speak to leadership or not? Or let's face it, when things aren't going well, everybody's fragile. Your leaders are fragile. Everybody else is as well. But it's been a tentative hockey team. It's been a robotic hockey team. It's been a mechanical hockey team. You lose your creative flow. You lose your confidence, except for Jake Gardner. You lose all these other kinds of things, which put you a little bit behind the eight ball. I can see that element a little bit, but you know, you can't get rid of the hard work. And I just found with some of them as well, just offensively, about doing the smart things or just doing the little bit of jam or the necessary things, it hasn't been there over this streak.
Hey, your top line has not been scoring, okay? And do you think, as we look back on these last, well, just number of games since Peter Horchuk's been thrust behind the bench, if we just take the last, say, four on the road trip and the game tonight, and you say, okay, they're in a real funk, you know, snake bitten. But then you get a team like Carolina that is not one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, and you would think that even with injuries, things would be equal, because you go back to the time in which they went into Carolina and lost 3-1. I mean, that was a dog's breakfast kind of an effort. You weren't banged up. Carolina was the team that was banged up, and Carolina find a way to win.
This is where it all started.
Okay, so then tonight after the 4-1 loss, you've got Bozak at minus four, JVR at minus four, and Phil was only minus three. So that's a combined minus 11 from your top dogs that you're starved for goals. And if you're not either doing it on the defensive end of things, at least hopefully you're generating some scoring chances. But again, I think sometimes these numbers don't lie. This is a case where they're just in a real tremendous funk, and it's at times painful to watch the way that it's occurring for them.
As far as, again, I don't know why I keep looking at things, calling guys up from the Toronto Marlies, doing all those other things. Like the skate this morning, everybody's there now, which is different. I think it's necessary. You see Peter Horchuk trying to keep, because Randy didn't skate on day of game skates either. So Peter Horchuk is out there as the head coach.
He was there occasionally.
When? I didn't see Randy once this year.
I think you were busy. You were busy.
I'm doing the show. Yeah. I'm watching, focusing. I'm focusing. Well, you're back there calling my cell phone when I'm on the air all the time. So anyway, Peter Horchuk out on the ice using that kind of time and also trying to be upbeat and that with everybody. Keep it that way. Tough to do, but
you know, the only way to go about it. And it seemed like all the right things going on there. And we'll get a practice, then we'll get a head in the road to Ottawa, a couple practices, or just head off for the All-Star game.
Yeah, you know what? They did not. They had a an off-ice workout yesterday after, you know, the four-game road trip, and that first game is never easy when you come back home from being on the road, especially when you go out west. You know, I'm not building any excuses, but it is tough. And so, as you mentioned, they were back on the ice. Here's another loss they've got to deal with. And somehow, when they wake up tomorrow, they have to find a way to, again, there are no easy solutions when it comes to maintaining some kind of a workmanlike attitude. I'd even say sometimes getting upset and getting mad. And I know David Clarkson tried to do that tonight, but you know what I'm saying? There needs to be more emotion than from just a couple of guys on this particular roster.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, that's why there was a surprise in some manners about Dion Phaneuf going back at Eric Staal. Like, first the hit, nice hit, mm-hmm. good body check, just those kind of things you can try to do. And then Eric Staal right away going at him, and Dion then engaging, and Dion probably getting the upper hand. He had the ice on his knuckles. I don't know if it was from hitting the equipment. It looked like he got a few good ones in. It's hard to do nowadays with guys wearing the shields and that. But I don't know. Sometimes, like, you know, you're funny. Years ago, I think of our good friend Bruce Boudreaux, that the Red Kelly team. I know I'm going way back, but in the playoffs against the Broad Street Bullies, he called up three guys from the Dallas Blackhawks: Bruce Boudreaux, Paul Evans, Bob Warner. None of them household names. And they just came out. They weren't big guys, but they came out with some energy shifts in a playoff series against the Philadelphia Flyers, like something like that, to bump, grind, hustle, you know, buzz around that kind of way. And sometimes you weren't seeing a lot of that. You weren't seeing a lot of even those kind of differences from the Toronto Maple Leafs. There was no Colton Orr anymore or Fraser McLaren or even to try to engage somebody in a fight.
Well, you know what? And if you're talking about the fourth line for the Maple Leafs, so again, with limited ice time tonight, as I look at the sheet here, Sammy Carrick, 2 minutes and 17 seconds of ice time. You know, Matt Fratton's being a call-up, 3 minutes and 39 seconds. The other guy that would have had, you know, very few minutes would have been David Booth at 6:41. So, you know, unless you're prepared to, I would have, you know, considered, and I know they're still hard strapped for goals, but why not Sam Carrick, Troy Bodie, and somebody else that might just be a fourth line guy that's just going to dump the puck in and crash and bang bodies and create some kind of an energy, you know, claw, scratch, block shots. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, absolutely.
I think that's what you're asking. And, you know, even in the limited ice time that Sam Carrick has had, and I know I'm stretching here, I am stretching talking about the fourth line, but, you know, hit a goal post there. I believed it was in San Jose and had a couple of chances, you know, with limited ice. So, again, Peter Hornacek elected to go with the nine forwards, and in some ways I don't know if I could argue with that because of the fact that they have been so goalless, you know, as a group of forwards up front. They've just haven't been able to manufacture very much.
Well, I'll tell you, we will be back. Of course, we have the game on Wednesday against the Ottawa Senators. So we have that game, of course, on Wednesday against the Ottawa Senators. So we'll be the guys with all the coverage, the last game heading into the All-Star break, and being able to look at things and kind of size it up, and hopefully a win to a small victory that way heading into the All-Star break for the Leafs and the organization and the fans. A couple other things. It's you mentioned about the lines, and I go back to it again. It's the first line that has just not impressed. So the fourth line, whether you're saying it's a stretch, should they get more ice time? They probably merit in many ways. I just find this is too similar to what happened with the first line last year. I mean, the dive at the end of the season, their stats plummeted, and it seemed to mirror the fate of the team. And I go back to about Tyler Bozak, because I've certainly had no problem taking any criticism in calling him in years gone by the accidental first line center, because that is kind of the way it all evolved. But then it seemed like he certainly earned it. He seems to fit in quite well with those guys. But you really do, to repeat myself, need that strength up the middle, the two-way hockey up the middle, the playmaking up the middle, all those kinds of things. And of the three guys, I have found that the biggest void on that line.
Yeah, you know what, and you know, we've mentioned it before, for whatever reason, these last 3 weeks, the death of his grandmother, you know, whatever it is that now 9 out of the last 10 games, bagels. Like, no goals, no assists, only that win against Columbus as Tyler Bozak contributed offensively with getting 20 minutes a night, killing penalties on the power play, and then if you go down the line, your next guy in line is the guy who scored the power play goal today. It's not like Nazem Kadri has been that visibly effective. I think there's been glimpses. And again, tonight, there was some generated opportunities that Kadri was able to produce. But if your top guy is not getting it done, and then your second guy is not getting it done, don't look to Trevor Smith and Sam Carrick to produce offense for you. It's just, a strength down the middle is just not happening for the Maple Leafs. And, you know, with no Komarov in the lineup and obviously Joffre Lupo, Peter Holland, it just shows you, I think, the lack thereof of depth per se, you know, in the Leaf organization at this juncture in time. You know, another thing that I think they're going to look to hopefully address in the near future.
Well, Nazem Kadri, the first goal by a Toronto Maple Leaf forward in over 337 minutes. You're talking over 5.5 regulation games that he gets.
Not including the empty net, right? That's what we're talking about?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I think that's the stat everybody's been throwing around, because that fifth goal that they got against the Columbus Blue Jackets was in an empty net. So the goal of Stroud for a forward was a long time. Nonetheless,
yeah.
It got broken, so.
Well, anyway, we'll find out, of course. We'll be back at it on Wednesday. We have the Leafs taking on the Ottawa Senators, but tonight, a nice ending anyway, a little positive action, but the score sheet, Carolina 4, Toronto Maple Leafs 1. You've been listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelnick, Mark Osborne. We'll catch you again on Wednesday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.